listening to the Chain Reaction Podcast. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the show. I am your host, week in and week out, at least for now. And today I am joined by one of my two favorite co-hosts. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, wow.
Too much. What's going on with you? What are you? Oh, are you hot in your ear? You sound okay here.
No. I'm great. I'm trying to figure out there's an audio feed coming from somewhere into my ear, and I don't know where it's coming from.
Let's see. I shouldn't be feeding back into you. You guys, we did actually figure out the audio before we went on air, and it was fine. Oh, it wasn't you talking.
Yeah,
I have a button I can push where you will just echo back into yourself over the air and be unable to speak. So if I ever feel like you are being too articulate and I am not, and I want to look more impressive, I may just start feeding your own voice back to you.
Mature.
Yeah. Well, you know, you do what you can. Technically, it's not aggression. It's just a dick move.
Yeah. I was watching a movie last night with Mel Gibson. I think it was like Bloodfather or something with William H. Macy.
Bloodfather?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's this movie where he's got to get his daughter out of some trouble with some Mexican cartel types, whatever. And he's talking about how he's going to deal with these people. And William H. Macy warns him against it. And he says it's fitting or whatever. And then he goes, well, it may be fitting, but it's not proper. Do you know the difference between fitting and proper? And he was like, what is it? And he was like, well, I can probably stick my whole thumb up your ass and it'll fit. But it wouldn't be proper.
Well,
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I don't really think he was really catching his meaning as to the use of the word fitting.
Right.
Not referencing a physical fit. Is that a good movie?
You know what? I'm surprised. It's actually pretty good. Like, I saw it advertised a bunch and I ignored it. But, like, I really got into it last night.
I like being surprised by things. That's why I try to keep really low expectations of everything.
Yeah.
Hey, it's not bad. Right. It passed the time. So what's up with you?
Nothing much. The same old, really. Just,
yeah, I see you're producing videos like crazy, relatively speaking. Your content creation's going through the roof over the last few weeks.
Yeah. That's the new YouTuber thing where, you need to hurry up and get to your first 100 videos fairly quickly. But, you know, also I want to slow down a bit so I can bump up the production quality because I'm selling myself short, honestly.
Okay. Well, it's good to figure out. At least you can do it fast. So Something really hilarious happened on Friday that only the writers of Back to the Future could have predicted. Donald Trump.
Did they?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I think it was like, it's not like, it might be Biff, but whoever, you know, kind of the quote unquote bad guys are. And there was a caricature basically of a rich guy that it was elected president in 2016. And that caricature was based off of Donald Trump.
Really?
And, wow. Yeah. I don't remember which Back to the Future. That's what the writer said.
It seems like a lot of people kind of predicted that. Like, if you go back, I think The Simpsons predicted it as well.
Funny.
It's just one of those
things. It's comedic, yeah. Yeah, this whole, even the other choice, I mean, Hillary Clinton was a caricature of a politician. I felt like, you know, so obviously in bed with other nations, in bed with the military-industrial complex, lies at every turn, does everything she can, making whatever sacrifices she can, including like staying with her husband to try to get power, you know, and just this sort of deceiver in flesh. Like, and then so you had a caricature of a politician and a caricature of a rich guy running for president. And we got the more humorous one. And for that, I might be grateful. We'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm looking at it. I mean, like as an anarchist, it's an odd place to be in because it's like I'm not sure whether to be more scared that Trump won or more happy that Hillary lost because I don't like either of these people. I mean, I don't like anybody for president, but, you know, either way, I would have been more than happy to see one of them lose. I just wish it could have been both of them.
Yes. And I wish every president would lose. I saw a conversation on Twitter that was pretty funny. I wish I remembered who it was. But anti-federalist NC, Jake, I can't remember his last name. We both know him. But he was talking about your favorite presidents. And he said, or at least favorite presidents. And he said that his least favorite was everyone except for some guy like William I can't remember his name. So sorry, YouTube. I don't know presidents. I'm an anarchist. That's my excuse. What's yours? But his legacy was that he was sick for his entire presidency for like 46 days. Then he died. That was his term.
Oh, that guy was awesome.
It's not. This isn't like I'm glad this human being died, but I'm glad that this president didn't do anything to further the expansion of the state and the violation of human rights.
Yeah,
which is what all government relies on. Yeah,
great president. If you can't actually do anything, you're awesome.
Yeah, and we don't talk about Trump often, so we'll talk a little bit about him during his inauguration day, and I promise we won't do that much more talking about him, except to criticize his foreign policy. And I believe I saw Ben Stone tweet that there have been two drone bombings already.
Two drone strikes already.
Yeah.
Day two.
Yep, day two, which beats Obama in terms of rate, because he didn't kill people with drone bombs until day three.
Yeah.
So Trump's really, on his game. Really getting after it and getting that money to these bomb makers and the troops and these various sorts of rich welfare-reliant groups.
When during your inauguration speech you say that you want to eradicate radical Islam from the face of the earth and people go nuts, that tells me two things. One, you don't understand how things work because you can't kill an idea. This is all based on an idea. You can kill as many people as you want. You probably just end up creating more terrorists.
Exactly.
And
ideology definitely has an impact on how people respond to things. And some ideologies are more dangerous than others. But historically, over the course of the world, people that are considered terrorists have existed from all sorts of different cultures and all sorts of different religions.
Yes.
And the one thing that they have in common is a larger, far more powerful imperialist nation. Make sure to blow that right into the webcam when you do it. Really just get the ambiance going. But
I wasn't.
No, that would have been funny. I would have appreciated it. I don't know if I have anything for that.
Do like a little ninja vanish real quick. A little.
That's for when Harding comes on and starts talking about the Bilderberg Group.
I want to believe.
just playing Jeremiah. I don't even know if he watches these. He might when he listens to the podcast.
Yeah.
Truthfully, I didn't watch hardly any of the inauguration stuff. I watched a few minutes of a few things because why? I mean, some of it's really fascinating, and I think all the pomp and circumstance is interesting, and it's entertaining how many hoops people jump through in terms of this sort of ceremonious formalities to try to make people feel and give people the sense that there is legitimacy in this imposition of a violent ruler upon others.
So I did watch.
Good.
I watched
someone needs to
pretty
talk
much
about
the entire inauguration just for the entertainment value.
Yeah.
And I was entertained for like 15 minutes and then creeped the fuck out for the rest of the time because like it really hit me. Like I always understood it to be true, but it really hit me watching it that this shit is a religion. This is not just some job. Like, this shit is a religion.
The most dangerous religion. Far more dangerous than Islam. Like, I call the definition of statism the moral justification of aggressive violence. That is what the religion is founded on. That is what it exists on. And that is its God.
It really is. It really is. And just watching all of the weird ceremonies with like all of the people in ridiculous uniforms marching around. And I'm sorry, like if you're soldiers and all that, I don't understand what that's like being over there. But that's mainly because I would never do it. But, yes. You know, just watching everybody in these funny costumes, like marching around, looking like human robots, and then having like the God Emperor come out and then like going in to sign all of these bills, having to sign each different thing with a different pen. And I'm just like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, how does anybody take this shit seriously? Other than the fact that, you know, they'll kill you for not doing what they say to do. But I mean,
propaganda.
It's ridiculous.
And
man.
If you consent to it, if you allow them to do it, if you perceive it to be legitimate, if you fool yourself into thinking that there's some sort of legitimacy involved in it, then you don't have to feel like a victim.
And but you're still a victim.
That feels better. Oh, you are still a victim, but it's much better to be a victim of your own choosing, you know, or to think that you're not being victimized and this is all legitimate, because it feels shitty, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
it's like if a man approaches a woman that doesn't want to have sex with him.
Yes.
And he says, we are going to have sex right now. Now you can play along or you can resist me and I'll beat the shit out of you. And then she decides, well, I guess I'll just play along. Like, she's still a victim, even though she's going along with it, because she doesn't really have any options. She's had her options chosen for her.
Yeah. And that, in terms of children who have weaker minds and as a general rule, and stronger defense mechanisms in their brain so that they can feel like they can keep, you know, going on and making it through life, they are actually more likely to feel, in cases of rape, like it was an okay thing, like they did consent to it, like that, you know, was something that felt good that they did, which results in them feeling more guilt and shame on their part, which is horrific. But then they are able to feel safer in their life, which is a lot of human defense mechanisms, especially for children, revolve around feeling like you're safe, you know. And, and that's why kids tend to take on guilt with things like getting hit for doing something that their parents didn't like, instead of blaming their parents. It's because guilt is an easier thing for a child to handle than feeling unsafe from specifically the very people who are supposed to be protecting you.
Right, because the mind will always try to protect its own sanity. So if it has to create whatever lie to wrap itself in, that way it can just kind of operate in as normal a fashion as it can, it will do that every time.
And the propaganda machine of the state, from childhood all the way, you know, through every single inauguration and the passing of every single law and every single court structure, it does just an excellent job of providing a lie that is easy to believe.
Absolutely. I mean, you have it beat into your head, you know, almost from day one. Like, the second you start any sort of education, it's beat into your head that this is, you know, this is not only the way things are, but this is proper. This is the way things should be. And then all the way up through, you know, grade school, high school, college, into your adult life. And then if you ever question any of that for a minute, like, you're looked upon like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Yep. That is one of the sad parts of existing in this world. Like, those who are opposed to violence on peaceful people, they are the ones who there must be something wrong with. They're just
right,
not
and
seeing
that's really
things
what
clearly.
It comes down to.
Yeah. What irrational, insane people who insist upon moral consistency, who insist that there is a right and wrong way of treating every individual that does not change when there's some magical hand on the Bible inauguration process.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm not completely certain. I did see it, but I can't confirm it. But it almost looked like when Trump took his oath, he placed his hand on a Bible, but underneath that Bible was a brick. And people are saying, like, that's the first brick in the wall. And I'm like, holy shit, this guy's fucking insane.
There was a brick underneath the Bible?
I'm fairly certain. I'm going to look for that picture just to make sure. But I'm fairly certain there was a brick underneath that Bible.
All right, you look for the picture. Have you been keeping track of the protests, violence? Is there a lot of violence occurring? Like, literally, I've had a really busy weekend and I haven't paid attention to any of it. Even though I wasn't going to pay that much attention anyway, I paid even less than usual. So I'm a little bit out of the loop when it comes to today's events. That's okay, because moral philosophy remains true regardless of the day's events.
Well, I don't think there's much going on now, okay. But it got bad. Yeah. It got real bad. Yeah. It got real bad. And for me, like I kind of felt like I was living in the Twilight Zone, because I had gotten used to seeing riots over the past year, and then like just everything just kind of following a certain checklist. And then when I'm watching the riots during Inauguration Day, I'm like, this is the Twilight Zone. It's like, this is the white people riot. Like, there was just like all white people going nuts. Like, just, I mean, just, but you know, all of the anti-fascists just smashing out windows, turning over trash cans, and setting them on fire.
Anti-fascists?
Yeah. Well, that's what they call themselves.
Oh, that's what they call themselves. but we are so against fascism, we are going to blow out the windows of, I'm sure it was only Trump's property, right? They didn't do it to any innocent bystanders, of course. It was just focused on the actual perpetrators.
Well, actually, I don't think anything belonging to Trump was harmed at all. But there a lot of evil buildings and, you know, smart mouth trash cans that got taken care of. And then on top of that, it looked like the people that were out there covering the protests, like they were so thirsty to try to, because, you know, protests are a great place to go for photographers to get great, great pictures that, you know, that you get awards for and shit like that. And it looked like they were fishing so hard, because for a while there wasn't much going on. So they would knock down a trash can and they would light this little puny low energy fire. And then you would see like a group of like 30 photographers just all huddled around the trash can with the tiny flame, just all taking pictures of it. Like, are you getting it? Are you getting it? It was weird. But then it ramped up a bit. They burned a car, at least one car. I know at least two people were shot.
Oh,
at least one.
But
person
you're in
was
DC.
Stabbed.
I mean, that happens anyway.
Well, no,
right?
No. I'm in PA. I.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
You used to be though.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was so happy not.
I don't
to
know
be
why my
DC
brain went there. My bad. I'm forgetful.
I was so happy not to be out there for this shit.
Yeah. I bet.
But yeah, you know, just the typical violence and screaming and. Like I've been saying the whole time leading up to this protest, is that these protests really don't do shit. All it is a bunch of people, they get together, they scream, they stomp around, and they chant some stupid chants. And then the most that will happen is that you may find some other person there who is caught up in energy like you are, and you might find somebody to fuck for that night. And then after that, that'll be it. That'll be it. I mean, like, you know, after all of that's done, nothing will be accomplished except for a bunch of property damage and, you know, some lives taken. And it's usually by the protesters that end up killing each other because they're just so full of rage. They don't know what they're doing. And I saw Alex Jones out there.
It's easy to be full of rage when other people are like, that mob mentality is a frightening, frightening thing.
Yeah.
That's why democracy is so scary.
Yeah, a lot of people that weren't involved in a protest were kind of getting involved because they were pissed. Like, I saw a video with Alex Jones, and he swings the camera over to this guy, and it looked like he was just trying to get to work. And, you know, a group of these idiots just kind of are just blocking his way, and he's getting really, really pissed. And after the cops come, like, it looks like, I don't know, there was an attack before the camera went to them. But so I don't know who started it. But after the cops came and they broke it up, they were separating the guy who was going to work and a woman who was with the protesters. And the guy hooked off on this girl. Like, I mean, he rocked her shit. And it was foul because it was already over at that point.
Yeah.
Like, it was, you know, like just because he wasn't one of the protesters, like it was still a disgusting thing to see. And then the cops who, you know, which shows how arbitrary it is because like they just didn't do shit. Like, you know, and it's funny because they're railing against the cops, and then this girl gets punched in the face, and then she's looking at the cops like, "Are you're not going to do anything?"
All right.
And then they're just like, "No."
All right, so, YouTube, you know. Sorry. I went looking off for Trump's voting percentage in Washington, D.C., and somehow I ended up changing the stuff that was streamed to YouTube on my computer while I went off trying to search for that. Because I read an article today that was talking about Trump in Washington, and I think I think they were going through different counties, so I didn't see a full number, but in a lot of places, he got less than 10% of the vote for a presidency in D.C., which means that there is probably a higher concentration of people there that are against him than anywhere else, which is also funny in terms of Hillary Clinton being the politician's politician, where the place where so much of the activity is just driven by government, almost everyone voted for Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because that's how it works.
Yeah.
They want the machine to run as smoothly as possible. They want to be able to screw over as much people and make as much money doing it while they screw everybody over. And that's why they all, it was a no-brainer for all of those people to vote for Clinton because,
right,
she knows how that shit works, and she's fully on board.
She will make sure that Washington, D.C. gets theirs.
Oh,
she
yeah,
will make sure that the politicians and their lobbyists get what is coming to them at cost to the taxpayer.
Yeah, everybody's pockets would have been real fat under Clinton except for, us regular folk.
Yeah.
There would have been a lot of passionate speeches, a lot of playing to the crowd blacks are all victims. Clinton was basically a robot, but her speech writers would have taken care of her though.
Yeah, that's true. Obama was so good at reading speeches and delivering them. He really was excellent.
No, Obama was a great teleprompter reader.
And that's not saying a teleprompter reader is not a criticism. That's actually a difficult skill. A lot of people aren't that good at. It means he's not being, or I don't know if you meant it as a criticism, but I don't think about.
I agree that it's a skill to be able to keep up with a teleprompter like that. But I do mean it as a criticism.
Okay,
he's just reading some shit somebody wrote for him to say.
Yep,
because you can tell whenever he goes off script, he's just a stuttering mess. Like he cannot talk unless that teleprompter is there. If he's not reading the teleprompter, it's just
he sounded like you just there. Same.
Well, that was me sounding like him. But
oh,
yeah.
I got you. Yeah, I was just give you a hard time. I'm in a dick mood.
He's great when that teleprompter is on. Like he can read it with such emotion, and if you didn't know the teleprompter was there, you would have thought that was just him.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's skilled at reading speeches made for him by somebody else. Yeah, no, he had some really good speech writers,
and they just get tons of credit for that shit. They get so people get so enamored with his ability to write speeches and his comedic timing is good too.
Yeah,
on that stuff. I mean, that's another difficult skill,
no, he's or very I
don't
know,
unique. Yeah. And then they don't pay attention to the 26,000 bombs dropped on by the U.S. or U.S. bombs dropped on Muslim majority countries in last year alone. Yeah.
Which, according to an article I was just reading, that 90% of those deaths were actually just civilians.
I'm familiar. I'm guessing you are reading the drone papers originally delivered by The Intercept. And if these numbers are the same, then they are not necessarily civilians, but unintended targets. And they have no reason to believe that they are terrorists. But the way that the government decides whether or not they killed an enemy in action is if they killed a male that they consider to be of fighting age.
Yeah, so if you're old enough and you're there, then you're then you're considered an enemy combatant.
Yes.
So, they inflate their numbers the same way that they've been inflating the rate of student loan repayment.
Yeah. Yeah. And the drone papers reveal a lot, but it's not necessarily civilians, just unintended people. Still horrific. I just want to clarify. But
they can't even tell. I mean, if we're just going by who was confirmed, this is an obvious, quote unquote, bad guy, versus who they can't confirm, then it's 90%.
Horrific,
but yeah, a lot of those people could have been, but it's just that you don't know. And then you're still dropping bombs on people and you don't even know.
Exactly.
They're dropping just in case bombs.
Yes. I mean, how many of that 10% that were, actual enemy combatants became enemy combatants because of other people that were bombed by the U.S., you know, or other nations that were bombed by the U.S., and either it was a family member, a friend, or they experienced so much economic destruction in their country that they were decided they had to fight back any way they can, and then became an enemy because of preemptive action by the U.S. and its NATO allies.
Oh my goodness, the U.S. government is fucking everything up right now. I mean, what they have been, but I mean, like, especially
every
right
government
now,
does. They're just the biggest.
Yeah, but when it comes to the Middle East right now, like, they're going crazy, and it's having a wider effect on you know, other countries, because I mean, they're all right. So under Obama, they're bombing 7 different countries,
yes,
bombing the shit out of everybody, and then because of that, you know, a lot of people were fleeing and fleeing into other countries and just causing havoc in other countries. I mean, like, just the domino effect of this guy. I mean, and it's not just him. It's whoever would be in office, because I guarantee Trump's going to ramp it up. Maybe he'll shoot for 15 countries. I don't know.
I don't know. He might. He very well might. But
like, he might bring the turn the Middle East into glass dream that a lot of these assholes on the internet are dreaming about.
Maybe, but he does seem not to be as aggressive with Russia as Clinton was, and as everyone wanted him to be, and as we've seen the media and the Central Intelligence Agencies. Yeah, or Obama or anyone. But
he's been teasing the fuck out of Putin.
Yeah, but we've seen everyone try to just ramp up tensions so much with Russia over the last 40 days. It's been crazy. I've never seen a disinformation campaign so obvious as it pertains to Aleppo, the Russian hacking, and just other criticisms of Russia. And I'm not defending Russia or Putin.
No, but it's
obvious government criminals. But there are obviously lies being spread as if they're true by mainstream media, politicians, and the intelligence agencies, which are just a branch of politicians, really.
Yeah. And even when they show that, hey, like, this is not... like,
there's
this
no
is
evidence.
Completely unsubstantiated.
Yeah.
And then instead of just saying, okay, well, we'll come back with proof. No, they just double down on the claim.
Yes.
And then now, you know, there are claims that Russia is doing this or doing that, or they've hacked the election, all that.
So, like, fucking stupid.
They're not even operating with proof. There's just, well, the consensus is. Like, consensus is not proof.
No, consensus, like, of a political
they're
organization.
Highly confident. What the fuck does highly confident mean?
Do you know?
Are you willing to go to war with somebody because you're highly confident with no proof?
The intelligence agencies that are highly confident without presenting evidence are agencies that will all be among the first to benefit, and the ones who will benefit most from increased tensions with Russia. So why would you trust agencies so obviously self-interested that aren't held accountable? They're not even held accountable by voting, with what little accountability the head provides, but certainly not by the market, which is the only real accountability that actually makes a significant difference. But what I was going to say, I don't have any conclusions as to why the media was ramping stuff up so much, but it really feels like they were doing it to try to put Trump in a position where he could not ease tensions with Russia before he got elected. Because what they've been doing previous is kind of this slow burn, this slow buildup of tension. And then Trump got elected. And then a few weeks later, they're trying to stoke the fire so big that it can't be contained when Trump is elected.
Exactly,
that doesn't mean that is what they did or why they did it. That's just my best guess as to their purposes.
No, I
Which
agree.
Makes me think,
I mean,
that maybe Trump, you know, we'll be less likely, as I originally thought, to start a nuclear war, which is good.
Yeah, which would be great. I mean, he's still a politician at the end of the day. So, you know, that's bad.
Let's
but
spend most
if,
of our time criticizing him.
Right. But I mean, you know, if one politician is going to do something that's less harmful, because make no mistake, war with Russia will be felt here. This is not this is not the Middle East. All right. The U.S. government is not going to be going up against a bunch of people in the desert with sticks and stones and in a few weapons that the U.S. government sold to them.
Yes.
Like, these are people that are ready to fight that have their own massive arsenal that is going to come here. I don't want to see that shit.
Right.
So here's the thing, watching Obama like just put strategically position his ships in really odd locations, just kind of fucking with Russia over and over and over, like just cut. Oh man,
and
like,
the constant
I'm
expansion of NATO and the constant and the consistent overthrow of governments who were in some way allied with or friendly to Russia in Libya and in Syria and in Ukraine. You know, they're seeking to do that to these places that have a positive relationship with Russia that Russia benefits from. Like you're destroying their allies in the region and bringing NATO right up to the Russian border. This organization, NATO, North American, what is it? Treaty something? I can't remember.
I can't remember.
But
shit.
Their original formation purpose was to stop the Soviet Union, which became non-existent 3 decades ago. So it's not, it no longer serves its purpose, but it continues to be expanded as if Russia is the same as they were when they were the USSR. And they most definitely are not. And one thing about war with Russia is that Russia cannot win a war against the US fighting a normal type battle. They absolutely can't. They have a relatively small economy compared to the United States, which means they can't last in like an infantry war or a typical bombing run war or anything like that. The US will crush them, and Russia's military is way smaller. What they do have is a ton of nukes, and they have a ton of advanced, or they have a few weapons and delivery systems that are very advanced, even relative to the United States, with things like their airplanes, because the US spends money on things like the F-22 Raptor and the F-35, which is a $1 trillion project.
Fucking tin cans with wings.
Yeah. The F-35 is a $1 trillion project that people still believe can be easily hacked by simple users, you know, and prevented from doing anything.
I mean, that has all sorts of problems. All that shit.
Yeah, because it's not NATO's motivated by actual protection.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to interject for a second. NATO is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
I said North American. Sorry, guys. North American, and we're talking about countries in the Middle East. North Atlantic.
But, I mean, this all comes down to oil, though. You know, that's what it is.
I disagree.
Like, I really think it comes down to oil, and I feel like Russia is probably the main competition for controlling oil interest. In the Middle East, and I don't think the U.S. wants to play ball with those guys at all when it comes to oil. So if whatever they need to do to get them the fuck out of the way, including going to war,
man, I think so much of this is driven by the military industrial complex. Like all this, like when you can have an enemy as scary to the U.S. people as Russia and make them seem more and more like an enemy, you can justify massive increases in already heavily increased expenditures to people and do so without consequence. And what we see, like just in Syria, you know, alone, like there's billions of dollars spent on arming these groups rebelling against the Syrian government. That is all money in people's pockets. And there's tremendous motivation to make sure that there are enemies and make sure that there are a lot of them, and enemies that the American people believe are really scary and really dangerous with an imminent threat. And they were starting
to
lose
a boogeyman.
Yeah, they were starting to lose their boogeyman.
Yeah.
I mean,
because the boogeyman is the greatest jobs program ever created. It's you know, as long as you have a boogeyman, there a lot of people are going to have a lot of jobs. Yeah. And it's a shitty thing to say, but I mean, that's how it works. You know, the bigger the boogeyman, the scarier the boogeyman, the more jobs there are.
Well, we should be clear. The more jobs there are for a specific group of people, because that money that they use to spend on that, on bombs, on military, on airplanes, on research and development for advancing the F-35. All that is taken out of the economy. It's taken from someone else who would have spent it engaging in voluntary, mutually beneficial relationships, expanding the economy and blessing themselves while blessing the person that they're interacting with. blessing is never an economic term I've heard. But I guess I'm really bringing my Christianity into this. But I do think about it that way. You know, sometimes like getting a great product can be like just an awesome thing for your life, and providing a great service to someone that they pay for. Like, you can feel great about their payment and they can feel great about your service. And it's, you're really blessing each other. I don't think I'll use that again. Next time I'll have another term prepared, but self-aware.
But I mean, that, you know, there is a lot of the economy that is just completely just skewed and perverted, and people don't notice how skewed and perverted it is, because so much of it relies on government's interference on its distortion. Government employees, even, there are more government employees when there's a big scary boogeyman, when there's an imminent threat, they have to fund all these new positions. You know, government contractors, you know, weapons manufacturers, you know, just the media has a frenzy. Their ratings go up like crazy. Like, there are all of these things that are somehow connected to this boogeyman that see massive benefit when there's a boogeyman. So there's a great incentive to tell everybody that boogeyman is real and it's absolutely coming tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Great incentive only created by government coercion in the market. We talked a long time on that stuff, but there is something I wanted to talk about today that I didn't want to talk about. So let me try to jump into it. We might not get to the other stuff I had planned today. We'll see. This is me, trying to use Andre as my anarchist counselor.
Why don't you lie down on the couch and tell me what happened?
You know, I'd lie down on the couch, but I'd be way too far from the mic. You know, like, full disclosure, depressed is the wrong word. I just feel sad and anxious. My heart hurts today. And this podcast, one thing I always want to do is be authentic. And usually me being authentic is just spouting off ideas about why the state sucks ass. But sometimes me being authentic is just telling you why speaking the truth is painful to my life, and realizing what the truth about the world is and the truth about the state can actually be really frustrating and sad, and actually make it kind of tempting to go back to not acknowledging the truth. So we had I know we talked about Christmas before, but at my house we had like a small family celebration for Christmas over the weekend. My brother and his wife and their kid, aka their dog, came into town and stayed at our house for the weekend. One thing I do, my brother and I try to do around Christmas and our celebration is play a bunch of video games. So we played Rocket League for the first time late into the night. We were horrible. I mean, I'd never held an Xbox One controller before. And then I'm holding it, playing this new game, being absolutely pathetic. But we had such a blast. It was so much fun. And then we were kind of wrapping things up, talking about life and stuff. He asked me, you know, I don't know. I hope I don't share anything he didn't want me to. But if I do, that's okay. I'll figure out how to deal with that. He asked me how I'm doing in my life. And this is, it's 5:30 in the morning. It's a little late. And I said, you know, good. Like, I'm just really grateful, and talked about having a kid and how having my boy Ephraim, who's, I don't know if I've met, I think I've talked to him on this show, but he's like 2.5 months old. You just feel, one of the biggest things is the sense of responsibility that I feel to him relative to what I felt in the past. Like, that, if there's a surprise when it comes to being a parent, it's the sense of feeling like I have to look out for him and protect him and keep him safe. I use that, I don't want to get into too much, but I use that to talk about the way the state makes it harder to take care of him, you know, through taxation, through taking my resources, through making it more difficult for people, especially the little guy, to engage in voluntary relationships. And I talked just how horrific that coercion is, and it feels even worse as a parent. And he started talking about how he was for government. So I started talking to, he didn't provide a justification for it yet, but I told him flat out that he is an advocate of me being murdered for exercising ownership over my own property, that it is literally impossible to support the existence of an organization that will, and you can tell me if you think that this logical conclusion is flawed or I'm missing something, but I believe it's literally impossible to advocate for the existence of an organization which will kill me if I choose to prevent myself from being locked in a cage without supporting the murder that is required for their very existence. Like, I don't think you can support the existence of government without supporting the murder back coercion that is at their foundation. And there's something about looking someone in the eye and telling them that
sets them off, maybe?
Well, I think for me, it's like, makes me realize, oh yeah, like that's true. You know, this dude that I love and am close to and has so many things about him and who he is and what he does and how he interacts with people and his humor and his compassion for others, you know, that's expressed in all these different ways that I value. And then, you know, to look him in the eye and tell him that and realize this is true about this person, you know, like, I've known him for 25 years or I can't remember his age. He was born in 1999. I have to do this cause I feel guilty. So he's 26. He's 26. Like, I've known him for 26 years and he favors me being murdered. And it's like looking him in the eye and saying that made me realize it's truthfulness. And man, in the moment I felt angry. And I think that's because I was really tired. You know, we were consuming alcohol. I don't think I consumed so much that I wasn't mentally there. You know, I try to be careful about my level of consumption so I can maintain myself, but I might have consumed enough and gotten so exhausted for being up so late that instead of feeling the first emotion, I felt the second one, you know, anger is a safe way to feel sorrow, you know, or to avoid feeling sorrow because sorrow hurts.
Yeah.
But anger is kind of its replacement behind any, I don't know if people listening have thought about this much, but behind every feeling of anger is usually some other more foundational elemental emotion that causes the anger in the first place. So you have to deal, if you want to deal with your anger, you usually end up having to delve into a lot of pain, which is part of the reason why feeling anger is so tempting. Because it can also make you feel strong. So I didn't handle it well in that way. You know, I didn't scream at him, but I wasn't as emotionally authentic with him as I wished I had been. I'm trying to think of where I wanted to go with this. One thing that might be interesting is for an anarchist conversation is I'm going to present to you, Andre, an argument for the state. And you can tell me what's wrong with it. So, because we kept talking about status arguments, and he said a lot of different things, and truthfully, the vast majority of them he contradicted at various points in the conversation anyway. But one which I don't think he contradicted at a later point is it becomes pretty obvious when you deal with it. But it is one that I've heard a few times. It's somewhat common, but not as common as who would build the roads. And what he said is that when the government's taxation of me is just and them killing me in order to take the property they say I owe them is just because I have purchased a home where when I was signing paperwork for that home, I signed paperwork that said I had to give money to the government if I wanted to engage in this contract with another person.
Okay.
All right. So, Andre, Tell us why that's faulty.
Well, this basically goes back to the rape example that I used earlier. It's you're placed into a situation where your choices are laid out before you. So they're not real choices. You know, the choices that you have been pre-selected by somebody else for you, and you can only choose between these choices. So it's like you can have a job, you know, you need to work, but you can't work unless you're willing to give us 30 or up to 50% of what you're making. You know, those are your choices. Don't work or work and give us your money. Or you can buy a home, but you know, you have to do it under these circumstances that include us, the government.
Yes.
Even though they have no proper place in that arrangement, because that should just be a contractual agreement between two private entities. So it's so you're given false choices. So that's not, you know, that's not really a valid argument.
It's interesting. I used an example that relates to two things you said today, one involving rape and one involving Mel Gibson. I don't know if you guys ever watch the movie Braveheart. One of the big things that they show you to give you compassion and empathy for the main characters of the movie and the people being oppressed is they show what I believe it's where the term the divine right of kings comes from. I can't remember for sure, but it's where this group of people in Scotland that's being ruled by kings of England, when they get married that night, the first night, the woman gets to sleep with the local ruler. She has to sleep.
Well, she gets to.
Yeah, lucky. She's so lucky. Yeah, didn't mean to phrase it that way. But that is kind of a status way of phrasing things.
Oh my God, she's so lucky.
Yeah. And it's parallel like to me buying a house. So someone owns the house and I go to buy the house and I want to engage in this voluntary contract with them. And we can, you know, work out the details with, you know, ourselves or with our realtors or with a lawyer, or with a title company, which is how it actually works. We can do that. And the same way with a marriage where, sorry guys, I just had to burp. With a marriage where, you know, I got married to my wife, you know, we can work it out with ourselves or with a minister or with a lawyer. But in the case of if I would have gotten to married to my wife in that condition, what would have happened is that instead of us working it out for ourselves, a third party forcibly entered into our contract saying that I will use violence to prevent you from engaging in this contract with this other person voluntarily unless you let her sleep with me. So, and it's the same thing. Like, you have the same conditions as people entering into a marriage as you do when people are purchasing or selling a house. You have them working out the details together with other people that they voluntarily bring into this relationship. And then you have a third party, meaning the state, that comes in and says, if you do not sign a contract saying that you will give us X amount of money, we will not allow you to engage in this voluntary contract, and we will use violence to prevent you. I don't know if that makes sense as an explanation, but I think that parallel is helpful because people have a really, really good conception of consent when it comes to sex, which is one of the reasons I feel like it's such a helpful descriptor, even though some people don't like it because people have this weird idea where they think that somehow taxation is more ethical than rape. But what it really comes down to is the individual preferences of the victim.
Well, I'd say what it really comes down to is property. And that's that's why you can say, you know, taxation or any other sort of violation is pretty much exactly the same as rape. It's somebody making use of your property without your permission.
Yeah. And that, like, one thing it's just gone through my head lately. I don't know why, but thinking about, you know, in terms of having a kid, now that I have him, you know, and I see his face, I can imagine a lot of situations where I would rather be raped than be taxed. You know, like what in terms of thinking, what's going to leave him better off for the future? Well, what if one year I made $1 million? You know, what if I had the option to just let someone, you know, or not a million, maybe more than, you know, to just let someone rape me instead of paying taxes that year. Like, I can actually provide for him way better than I ever could and leave him better off to do it. It doesn't, not saying I would or wouldn't or whatever, but the saying that somehow the two are incomparable is a position that the person advocating for some form of aggression would say, or the people actually doing the aggression. What it really comes down to, whether which is worse, because they're categorically similar, like you said, is how the victim feels about it and what the victim would have preferred. They're both pretty horrific, regardless.
I like how Ben Stone broke it down. He definitely brought some clarity to this, because like when you use something like a rape analogy or something like that, it, you know, a lot of people have an automatic like knee jerk reaction and they just flat out dismiss it. But it's very important to distinguish between kind and degree, because, you know, something like rape or murder is technically the same thing in kind, because they're both violations of someone's personal property.
Yeah. Yeah. But I call it categorically degree, similar, but kind.
But the degree is where they differ, because, you know, you're not coming back from a murder. You can come back from a rape.
Right.
You know, so the same thing with taxation and rape. In kind, they're technically the same because they're both violations of someone's personal property. But the degree is where there is a major difference.
But I would say that the degree depends upon the preferences of the victim.
Yeah, sure. You know, if you see one as less of an offense than the other, then absolutely. That's subjective.
When it's the people who are, it's never the victim, you know, of taxation, you know, that gets the credit in these situations. It's always the advocates of perpetration against others. It's always the rights violators who are the ones explaining why, you know, these two things are incomparable, you know, because they are seeking a justification for such a horrific violence. And they like to, advocates of taxation like to see themselves as less evil people than advocates of rape, and which is funny. I don't know any advocates of rape, but the biggest difference between advocating taxation and advocating rape is social acceptability. It's how the culture perceives it. I mean, you used to be seen as a crazy person, as a crazy outlier who had these ridiculous views if you were against slavery. That was the reality hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, if you thought it was insane to maybe tie a brick to a woman's ankle and toss her in the river because she may be a witch, like if you questioned that for a minute, you were absolutely batshit crazy.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Exactly. And so much of, man, I'm looking at our time. So much of human ethics, in terms of the everyday person, what they actually find to be ethical or unethical, comes down to what is socially acceptable for ethical behavior and what isn't. I mean, people think that, you know, I don't want to discredit people for organizing in large groups to, you know, try to make a difference or influence others in a positive way. I mean, go for it. But it's really easy to get together with millions of other people and talk about women's rights and women's equality, because almost everyone that I know cares deeply about women's equality. That doesn't
mean I'd say it's really easy to get together and talk about women's rights as long as you're part of the group of women that agrees with everyone else, because they did ban a pro-life women's group from attending.
That's funny.
So it's not, you know, it wasn't a women's march. It's just a women with these specific views march.
Right. Okay. So that's a good detail for me to know.
Sorry,
I'm glad you clarified, especially with that thing. I just mean, it's like, if you are actually speaking for people being equal, that's great. People should, you know, people should be equal. I really appreciate that, but it's really easy to do it, and you get no moral credit when one of the only socially acceptable things to do is fight for equality of people. It's a totally different thing, and you get tons of moral credit and, you know, applause by being, you know, someone in 1801 who is saying that slavery is immoral. Like, when you are advocating for equal rights when so much of the population is against it, especially if you're in a slave state, one that believes they benefit from the owning of others.
Which is,
the reason, sometimes it feels like the reason why most people are against slavery now is because it's socially unacceptable to be for slavery.
Yeah, it's popular opinion now. Yeah. It's commonly accepted, you know, widely to be against slavery. But at the time, you know, that's just what it was. And unless you were a slave, then, you know, it was just the normal thing. Just like all of the horrible things that happen today, it's just the normal thing. So people just, you know, because, I mean, everybody's doing it. Everybody pays taxes. So, I mean, it's just the way it is. Like, you know, you're crazy if you try to stand up against that in any way. Or if you end up getting dragged off to prison for the rest of your life for it, oh, well, you should have just paid.
Yeah. And I should note, too, for clarification, like, the only type of slavery most people are against is a very narrow band of slavery called, you know, chattel slavery, which I think is French for cattle, that was present in the U.S. 150 years ago. But they have no qualms about members of the state using violence to exercise ownership over the body and property of others.
Oh,
whether
that's
taxation
and then again,
or drug laws or, you know, anything that the state does is founded on some form of ownership.
Again, this goes back to you know, kind versus degree. You know, it's still a kind of slavery that we're all in today, but the degree is, you know, it's to a smaller degree, depending on how you look at it anyway.
it definitely varies. Like, I can see why, you know, I can imagine some, I have no idea what it'd be like, but I can imagine, you know, people who are more ethical than I will say, saying, you know, I'd rather just work for this person for the rest of my life on a farm picking cotton, you know, getting X number of, you know, meals a day, enough to survive, than be forced to fund drone bombings overseas, you know, or something like that. Like, it doesn't, you know, whatever. I don't know. But like you're saying, there is something about the subjective preferences of the victim that have to do with how horrific the occurrence is. Or the aggression is, not just occurrence. What else I want to say? I don't know. I ended the conversation last night going back to that, you know, I went to my room, laid it down next to my wife, and honestly, I just cried, like, for a few minutes. It's been a while since it's hit me like that, you know, seeing this thing in this person, and wishing he cared enough to just find aggressive violence against me unacceptable, you know, out of love. And it's a weird thing that you run into with status, where you see, I'm going to use a soul in kind of a generally pop culture sort of way, but where you see the soul of this person and there's so much light in it and there's so much good in it and there's so many positive actions toward other people and compassion and heartfelt conversations and consideration for the well-being of others in so many ways. And then you talk about the violence of the state and you run into this spot in the soul that it feels vacuous and empty. Like there's a light in these other places. And then there's just darkness and deception where the rest of the soul feels so pro humanity. And then you get anti-human in this place. And it's empty and it's unreasonable. And I don't know. It's hard to see that darkness. Does that make sense? Like where when you talk about this, and the state exists in this place in the soul that is irrational and is full of deception and doesn't care about the ethical treatment of individuals, or it claims to, but there's just no consistency there.
Right.
I don't know.
There really isn't. But I feel like it exists in the mind of people that go along with it in a way that kind of hides itself from appearing as it actually is, which is why, you know, it's incredibly important to use tact, especially when dealing with family members and close friends, because even if you spell it out to them, just, you know, no bullshit, no lead up, no nothing. You just state, this is what it is. They can't see it. They cannot see it, because in order for them to see it that clearly would mean that they have to completely change their entire worldview. And most people are not willing to do that in one conversation. That's something that takes time. I mean, think about the indoctrination that goes from K to 12. Like, you know, this is something that's beating to you over time. This is something that has to be taken out of you over time. So, you know, it's incredibly important to be very tactful when addressing this.
I've never been known for tact, and I don't know if I ever will be. But I have had a lot of conversations leading up to this one. Just going back to, sorry for being so unsure about whether or not I should bring stuff up, people, but like just feeling one of the things that makes this so complicated is being a parent. You know, like it's not really easy, but I feel like I'm much more comfortable myself with, you know, just most people wishing me to be dead if I choose to defend myself from aggression. Like, I'm accustomed to it at this point, and I'm not even angry about that anymore. But now I have a whole new person that I have to, you know, feel responsibility for, and you know, try to deal with a whole new set of emotions when it comes to the status, the worshipers of aggression. All right, Andre, I'm done with this. I'll try to be more tactful. Thanks for your advice. That was delivered without being very, very tactful, we'll say, with your words, trying not to tell me what to do, but at the same time letting me know what you think I should do.
Just general advice, because this is something that I'm sure we all have had to deal with, and it's fucking infuriating. I know, you know what I mean. Like I'm sitting here listening to you like tell this story, and I'm like, and I just feel it in my gut, like how much I hate it, because I've had to go through this so many times myself. It's terrible. I get it. But, you know, it's something that it's one of those instances where it's very important to not let the emotion get the best of you, or at least to really to just, you know, be very surgical about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it's a conversation I'm going to have after staying up all night, you know, between the hours of 5:30 and 6:30.
Well, that's also not
anymore
very great.
Because, that was exhausted. I was really highly emotional after playing Rocket League too. Man, that was fun, and I was so angry at how much I sucked. All right, you guys, we're skipping a whole huge segment I had. Maybe we'll get to it next week. And Andre has a news story for us.
Oh, yeah. Just really quick, if you end up having to go stand in front of the judge with the silly moo-moo, just be very careful before you go see your lawyer. Maybe drink lots of caffeine, because there is a former attorney, Mr. Michael Fine, who was sentenced to 12 years in prison for multiple counts of kidnapping with a sexual motivation. Specifically, the way that it happened was basically women would come to his office seeking legal advice. They would maybe, you know, need to have some papers filed or whatever. And they started noticing that they were kind of missing time. And eventually, you know, there were too many reports of that, so they started sending women in with cameras. And they were, you have to look this up. Jeremiah, when you get done, you have to look this up.
Okay, so I'll look it up right now and stop paying attention to you. How's that?
Okay, yeah, do that, because it's fucking hilarious. So the lady's sitting in the office, and you know, they're talking about whatever files they need to form, and then he just goes over to her side of the chair, and he just does the basic hypnosis shit. And he's just like, okay, as I'm talking, you're getting more sleepy, you're getting more sleepy, sleep. And then he does the Bruce Almighty shit, where he's in a room with Jennifer Aniston, and he's just like, every time I say the word pleasure, your body is going to be filled with so much pleasure, you're not going to be able to control it. Pleasure, 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 pleasure. And it's fucking terrible. I shouldn't be laughing because this man is you know, raping women via hypnosis. But I mean, just to see something so extreme take place, it's like you would not believe this if you didn't see it for your own eyes. It's fucking insane. And so when the video that I watched, like he hypnotized a lady and he starts getting all super sexual. Oh. And then the cops walk in and they, you know, promptly arrest him and haul his ass off. And they also found a bunch of child pornography on his computer because, of course, I mean, you know, it's not shocking the guy who's hypnosing women into sex is.
No, human rights are not his forte.
No, not at all.
So, also, apparently every time, because I seriously did just click on a browser and see if I could find a video quick to put up here. But every time I go to find a video, this thing changes and transitions so that our video that's showing up is something completely different. So I'll try to figure out what is going on with that before next time, YouTube. I know you guys don't care that much probably about seeing our faces, although Andre's always looking good.
I think you got to start it in a new scene and then, you know, put everything into that scene and then turn off this scene on the new scene.
No, no. If I click on a browser and go into a new browser and then I come back to OBS and everything's all changed and I have no idea what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so definitely
it's worse than that. Maybe I have hotkeys that continue to work outside the browser or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, we won't bore you guys with any more of that stuff. That is a crazy news story. I can't believe the fuck category. I can never believe that hypnosis even works. You know, in terms of its effectiveness on people, but I'm guessing that if he's probably dealing with a more vulnerable and prone population to stuff like that.
Certainly more people are susceptible.
Yeah.
Than others.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's get out of here today. It's almost almost an hour 10. I mean, who knows how long it's going to be on the outro. I might have to talk about, you know, my pain again and whine to people. We'll see. Any concluding thoughts you want to leave people?
Really just get back to your normal lives. I mean, if for anybody who's caught up with the, you know, the political bullshit, the emotional shitstorm that's taking place on the internet right now, just ignore it. Like nothing has changed. Nothing. There's just somebody who's less charismatic and office dropping bombs on people now. That's it.
Right. And more charismatic with a smaller percentage of the population. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's possible that things will end up worse because of Trump relative to Hillary or even relative to a third term of Obama, but there's no reason to think that they will, and all you can control is what's in your control. And seek to expand your area of influence as you get better at exercising ownership over it in a way that's helpful for you and helpful for others. Like the more good you bring into the world on your own, the more beneficial it is when you add more influence to your life, where you have more influence on more people.
And also, there are a lot of people who are at that point right now where they're so full of rage and they feel so let down that they've probably completely given up on politics, which is awesome. I say now is the perfect time to start reaching out to some of these people and maybe not be an asshole when you do it. Just kind of welcome them into the fold and, you know, try to do a little deprogramming.
Yes, it is fantastic when people give up on using the political means to get what they want.
Yes.
Violence is shitty. All right, you want to plug your shit, man?
You can check me out on Twitter at iStackSilver, Gab iStackSilver. Hit me up on PSN iStackSilver. On YouTube, iStackSilver. And that's about it. Yeah.
Homie Stack Silver.
Yeah.
Someday I'll make him show us his stacks. You know, I have a bunch of silver certificates.
Really?
They're worth nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. You can't redeem them now. $1. They're cool to have.
Yeah, they're legal tender worth $1. I think a lot of them you can sell for like $1.50.
Yeah.
So I can really, you know, really make a lot on that. I have no idea. They came into my possession via my grandfather on my father's side, but I have no idea why they thought they'd be worth money. Anyway, thanks for joining us, you guys. I appreciate it. As always, thank you for listening to me. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I always appreciate talking to you, Andre and Jeremiah. Next week, we're going to do a three-person Q&A session. A three-way Q&A session. And so if you have any questions, you can post them in the YouTube comments. You can send us an email at statesarestupid@gmail.com. You would spell that. You can send us a message on Twitter. We have a pinned post there asking a question at Chain Reaction, where the T is a 1 on Twitter. And, I think that's it for the ways you can contact us. We may be interested in a Skype call, too. So if you're interested in doing that, please do it. Anyway, thanks for joining us again. Love you guys. Appreciate you. Hope you have a good one. And let's get rid of this government shit. I hate it. Peace.
I'm in.